And we begin this evening with the single transferable vote. January of this year saw the 100th anniversary of Sligo Corporation election of 1919. You might wonder why we would be talking about the Sligo Corporation election of 1919. Well, it was a significant poll. It was the first time that an Irish election for all the seats in a single legislative body used the single transferable voting system, the system which has become such an integral part and a very exciting and a fun part of Irish political life. Not fun for the politicians, but fun for the observers. To talk about how and why the change in our electoral process came about and why it's still going strong a century later, I'm joined by two guests. Elaine Callanan is lecturer in modern Irish history at Carlow College. David Farrell is Professor of Politics at University College Dublin. You're both very welcome indeed. Elaine, the idea of proportional representation actually came up during the debate over Home Rule, didn't it?
It did. If you go back through the John Redmond papers in the National Library of Ireland, you see he was very busy calculating numbers, population counts, how many Catholics there were in each county, how many Protestants there were. And he was trying to come up with a system whereby minorities could have a voice. And he looked into proportional representation in the single transferable vote. But he came to the conclusion in the end of the day that it wouldn't work because he wanted the unionist minority population in Ireland to have a stronger voice than their actual population numbers. So he ruled out the transferable vote then at that stage.
Talk to us then about Sligo Corporation's election in 1919, an election that otherwise would be of no significance and nobody outside of Sligo would be bothered with. It was called for because some weren't happy with the corporation's spending.
Yeah, well, apparently there was a lot of corruption and fraud going on in Sligo Corporation. But the other grave concerns were that Protestants, who were about 15% of the population, were getting no political voice. And the rates that were being charged in Sligo were very high. So they formed the Sligo Ratepayers Association to try and combat these issues. Initially, they worked with Sligo Corporation as it was, but because the rates weren't reduced, they decided to form an actual ratepayers association. And in that ratepayers association, they drafted a parliamentary bill. And Thomas Scanlon, the MP in Sligo at the time, took that parliamentary bill to the House of Commons. And it was passed in July 1918, got royal assent, and became the Sligo Corporation Act of 1918. And that's what introduced proportional representation, single transferable vote in Sligo. So,
and David, internationally speaking, it is an unusual voting system, especially when it comes to voting for the main houses of parliament, isn't it?
It is. I mean, you know, it's ourselves and Malta are the only two countries on this planet that use it to elect their main house of parliament.
And it's used in Australia to some extent, isn't it?
It's used in Australian states for one or other of their parliaments, depending on which state. Sometimes it's the lower house, sometimes the upper house. And it's used for the upper house of the federal parliament. And then you'll see little other areas, you know, Scottish local elections, the Isle of Man. It might be introduced for the Welsh Assembly in the future. So there's pockets of places that use it around the world, but just these two countries that use it for their main House of Parliament.
And where does it come from? And, you know, why did it extend beyond Sligo in 1919? Why did it survive that experiment?
Well, it was invented by an Englishman, Thomas Hare, in the 1850s, and it became quickly known as the English variant of proportional representation. So those continental European countries all adopted their own version of PR, but the British decided this was the model that they would preference if they were going to go and use it. And so they experimented on their colonies. And so we were lab rats, effectively. They tried it out on us, and they tried it out on the Maltese, and they encouraged it in Australia as it was forming its own federation. And, you know, Bob's your uncle, we ended up with it.
And why, Elaine, why did it stick here? Why, Sligo Corporation election must have been viewed as a fairly successful experiment.
Well, it was a successful experiment. There were 24 seats in the corporation that were up for grabs. 48 candidates put their names forward, and the results actually did give quite a good split across all the various divides. Very, very briefly, you had the Sligo Ratepayers Association, who managed to get 8 seats. You had Sinn Féin, who got 7 seats, Labour 5, and Independents 4 seats. So you had quite a good representation at that stage. So there was a number of reasons why this was brought in, but the main one was to give minorities a voice, particularly as we move into the Free State element of the story, that, you know, to allow greater
and
minority.
Then in 1920, we had local elections in Ireland, which were in effect the last all-Ireland elections in Ireland. There was a general election in 1921, but I think most of the seats weren't even contested in that election, so it doesn't really count, I suppose. But what happened then in the 1920 local elections?
Well, the 1920 local elections, they're nearly a story in and of themselves, but the single transferable vote was used in this particular election, again, to give minority voice to all people. And it worked out extremely well for the municipal elections. You see quite a good breakdown across many of the county councils. There's some interesting results come out of it. A little bit of shift, for example, in Derry, Londonderry, whatever's your preference for that particular area, where, you know, it was a unionist constituency. And then after the 1920 local elections, between Sinn Féin and Nationalists, they got 21 seats and Unionists got 19. So they were able to kind of shift the Unionist vote out a little bit in that. So, again, it was it worked very well across the country. It was rather different for the rural elections, which happened in June 1920. And then that one, you saw Sinn Féin really sweep the boards in terms of getting all of the votes, which is interesting because some argue that the single transferable vote was brought in to make sure that Sinn Féin didn't get a majority.
In the urban elections in 1920, were Labour standing or were Labour still waiting, as it were?
No, Labour actually stood in the 1920 local elections, and they did very well, actually, in many constituencies. Between them and Sinn Féin, they both did quite well, but Nationalists held their ground also in the local elections, what the old Irish Parliamentary Party people. So there was a very good division of votes. But then you did see things like, you know, Unionists doing well in Ulster and, you know, Nationalists doing well in Leinster and little bits of variances that you become quite familiar with. But overall, there was a fairly good split.
It showed off the strengths.
It showed off the strengths, PR. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, on two occasions, there were attempts to abandon proportional representation in favour of the straight vote, the first past the post system. In 1959, a referendum took place on the proposal. That was defeated. Then in October 1968, another constitutional referendum took place relating to the electoral system once again. Proposed to alter the electoral system for elections to Dáil Éireann from PR by means of the single transferable vote to the first past the post voting system. Once again, it was defeated, this time by a much bigger margin. In this clip from RTE Television Archives, reporter Ted Neelan is interviewing then Minister for Finance Charles Haughey during that 1968 campaign.
Now, in all three parties, there are deputies who rely on the PR system for their seats. In your party as well as the other parties, can these deputies be expected to be enthusiastic about changing, getting rid of the system?
Well, first of all, there's no reason why any deputy should suppose that he won't retain his seat under the new dispensation. But the only thing I can tell you is that our parliamentary party recently had a fully attended meeting and the enthusiasm there was quite exceptional. The only dispute or argument between us was how we could most effectively conduct the campaign.
Right, that's back in the days when we did not have referenda. David, Fianna Fáil was the party interested in reforming the voting system during this period.
Yes, it was a power grab, to put it in, you know, at its finest, really. I mean, Fianna Fáil had been in government, of course, a lot up to 1959. You know, they were the dominant party. But it's worth remembering, of course, that, very often they were in a minority government. So De Valera wanted to bequeath, as he went into the presidency, a secure future for his party. So it was a clever tactic to try, and they nearly did it.
And in 59, it was simultaneous with the vote for the presidency.
That's right.
It?
So it was a close call. They nearly got it. They nearly succeeded.
And why in 1968 was the majority against, do you think, considerably bigger? I think it was over 60% were against the proposal.
Well, if I remember, Elaine will know the history better than me, but in 68, they tied it with a second vote on the same day, as I recall, which was also talking about
constituency boundaries,
which effectively was to try and malapportion the system again to favour Fianna Fáil. And I think that was probably taking it a step too far.
Would you agree, Elaine, a pure power grab?
I would agree. I think what's interesting is in 1959, Éamon de Valera was running for president. So, I mean, it would have given Fianna Fáil a huge control over the country as well. And then if you think of 1968, Jack Lynch was Taoiseach at the time. And again, he was very popular Taoiseach. So I think they thought this was another moment in time where they might be able to switch back into the first-past-the-post system, but they failed miserably, particularly in 1968.
Question from Ray in Kilkenny. He's texted in, wants to know, when voting began 100 years ago, were there voting papers? And in a general election, were there presiding officers and poll clerks in polling booths?
Well, I can answer that. There were polling officers, returning officers, they were actually called then. And yes, people, of course, did fill out ballot papers. Once we moved to the single transferable vote, it was very similar to the way we all go out and vote today for any election. You put your number opposite your preferred candidate, one, two, however number of candidates are on the sheet. And that was done back then just as much as it is today.
David, turns out that the first past the post system, although it's obviously we associated with the United Kingdom, we associated with the British general elections, they have actually in a tiny proportion of instances actually used the transferable vote.
The British
have.
Yeah, yes, well, there was a big debate in 1918 about the introduction potentially of single transferable vote for, I think it was about a third of the UK constituencies. And it was quite a close call between the House of Lords and House of Commons. I think at one stage it lost by about 8 votes. There was a lot of ping-ponging between the two houses. If it had been introduced, we would have had the alternative vote, which is the system used to elect the Irish president for the bulk of the seats, and in the urban areas, single transferable vote. Anyway, when it went, didn't go through, I think in part as a compromise, if I remember correctly, some of the university seats had this introduced,
including Trinity
here. Mm.
So we actually had an example of that even before, the year before the Sligo election. In 2011, the UK, David, had a referendum to change their voting system that was roundly defeated, suggesting perhaps that people were very attached to their first past the post voting system in the UK. But was there a little bit of lack of tactical nous, perhaps, on the part of the Liberal Democrats?
I think that then leader Nick Clegg made a tactical error, because if he had gone into a deal with the Labour Party, they would have supported a referendum on the single transferable vote. Instead, he went in with the Conservatives, and they were only prepared to offer the alternative vote, again, the system we use for the presidential election. And the feature of the alternative vote that it shares in common with the first past the post is that it's a non-proportional system. So in effect, it was a referendum about very little of any import whatsoever.
And Elaine, your take on the pros and cons of the proportional representation system?
Well, the big pro for the proportional representation system is that it allows minority parties to have a voice. And the big negative of the proportional representation system is that you can get too many voices. This is why we end up with a lot of coalition. One of the advantages of the first past the post system is that you get a majority government, usually, whereas under proportional representation, you can get a large majority, but then they usually have to form a coalition with somebody else to run government.
But I suppose the argument against that is that they have lots, you know, coalition is something that's, is widespread across Europe, where don't have similar system to ours.
It is. And what it is, what is good for from our point of view, and what we're seeing even in Brexit, where they're finding so many difficulties, is that we have learned to govern by compromise to a large degree. And that's one thing that proportional representation has allowed. allowed us to do as well.
I suppose, David, one of the other cons that you would have noticed over the years is clientelism and the rise of clientelism, where you have people from the same party in the same constituency, something that you don't get in the UK.
Yes. But, in truth, there is quite a debate in the academic literature, in the political science literature, about the extent to which you blame the electoral system for the nature of politics in this country. You know, there could be other factors that are in play. Because, after all, we have other countries that use electoral systems that have many of the same properties of the single transferable vote. Finland and Denmark are two prominent examples. And there you don't find clientelism like we do here. So the argument that it's the electoral system that's causing it, The jury's out on that one.
I mean, would that be eliminated if you had PR STV in single seat constituencies as opposed to multi seat constituencies?
I don't think it would make much difference. I think if you change the electoral system on a Friday to whatever system you like, on a Monday the Irish politicians would do what Irish politicians have always done.
Okay. Elaine Gatherlin, David Farrell, thank you both very much for joining us this evening to talk about the history of the single transferable vote, 100 years old.